This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Carm Capriotto here, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts, and you're listening to the aftermarket's best-kept secret to personal networking. Hey, I'm glad to have you here. You're going to love this question-and-answer format style episode. It's kind of brand new with the newly retired Chris Chesney. My panel takes a deep dive into Chris's long and successful career. What was his most rewarding experience? Does he have any regrets? What is his forecast on the technician shortage and electric vehicles? And most importantly, is retirement really in the cards for Chris Chesney? Hey, thanks to our partners, Shopware and Broadly, for providing this episode. You know, digital communication makes it easy for your customers to understand the value that you're providing when you fix their car. Will you feel appreciated? Your staff feel appreciated? And most importantly, will you sell the work to pay the bills? It's all about Shopware on the web at getshopware.com. Hey, do you lie awake at night wondering why your competitors have hundreds of five-star reviews, but you only have a few? Rest easy with Broadly. It gets you more online reviews and more people coming to your shop on the web at getbroadly.com/chat. Hey, don't forget, another pioneering first for the industry right here, a virtual shop tour on Aftermarket Weekly. Listen or watch each week and see inside great shops in North America. I got a great panel. The guest of honor, Chris Chesney. Now, Chris is the senior director. But what he was for all these great years was the senior director of customer training at Advance Pro and the CarQuest Technical Institute. And now he told me in the green room that his new title is...
It's retired for now.
Retired for now. I love that. I love that. 6 years ago, that was my title. And then look what I did, see? Jay Ha is with us from Car Medics in Durham, North Carolina. Hi, Jay.
Hey, how are you?
Good, man. Scott Brown, the East Coast Scott Brown from Cardinal Shell, Springfield, Virginia.
How are you doing?
We are great. And Brad Pellman from Pellman's Automotive Boulder, Colorado.
How's it going, everybody?
Glad to have you guys all here. The story goes is I put Chris on a short list of this new idea that I had for a virtual Q&A, and then I invited him, and he said, yeah, that would be great. I'll be retired by then. And I said, what? Oh, my God. I had no idea. This wasn't planned, okay? This just wasn't planned. So I don't know how we treat this. We treat this as if you were still one of the critical components of our aftermarket, or... what are you going to do next then, Chris? And of course, maybe we'll hear some of that stuff. We're recording this on the 10th of September 2021, and tomorrow is the 20th anniversary of 9/11. I can't help but want to bring that up because I think in every one of our lives, we are old enough to have remembered that. I'd just love to go around the room and ask you, where were you? What were you doing when that first tower was hit, Chris?
I was sitting on the couch in my living room watching the news and watched it all go down live and quickly realized that we were probably not going to have class tonight. So I called all the students. I had DTEC training at the time, my own training company in Denver, and called all the students, and to a man, they said, they aren't going to stop what we do. Let's go to class. And we had class that night.
Wow. Interesting. Scott, how about you?
My shop's about 10 miles away from the Pentagon, and my brother-in-law was working in the basement there. I don't think he actually even knew anything had happened, but we were, you know, I was in the sales room, and I ran home and got a TV, and we brought it back and, you know, got the antenna and turned it on, and we just watched everything live, and it was just like, Chris, everything just stopped. And, you know, the next time I moved, it was to go to elementary school and pick up my kids and bring them home.
I'm definitely the youngest guy in here. I was in 10th grade, so I was in math class, and then we turned on the TV. They rolled the TV in, and it was right after the first plane hit, and I watched the second hit plane hit live, and it's just, I think I went back to church that week along with the whole nation. Just want to remember that moment, you know, 20 years. So
we were doing a remodel at our house, so I was sitting at home and just kind of getting up. We're in Colorado, so the time's different than a lot of you guys. You know, I probably was watching the same feed that Jay was watching and just watching the reporter, and then watched a plane fly into the building behind him, and the reporter didn't even know what was going on behind him. And yeah, it was chilling, and something you'll never forget. Called all my employees. We shut down the shop. Everybody needed to go get their kids. Things were just chaotic. So
thanks for that, Brad. I was at a conference. I was in Syracuse, New York. I remember this in detail. I was with one of the guys who I worked with. We were having an early breakfast, and it came on the news. We were sitting there in awe. We went to the conference site where there was going to be a golf round, and then conference. We were obviously very moved by it. Everything was canceled, and I drove home that afternoon. So yeah, those are incredible memories. Thank you for sharing them. Okay, guys, you're in charge. I just sit back in the studio and do nothing while everyone here is doing the virtual Q&A with Chris Chesney. And I want to start with Jay.
You know, we're talking about, Chris, your retirement. So I have to ask, you know, do you remember a moment in time in your career, and you've had a long one, where it was really, really rewarding and something just pops out at you when you think back?
From a rewarding standpoint, it's actually very recent. had a lot of watershed moments in my career, and I think back on those often. But the most recent, when COVID hit, I mean, we all just came home from Vision. We were in a meeting room in the research center in Raleigh, meeting with a couple of suppliers that we had scheduled meetings for, and we were getting the messages from corporate that we had to send everybody home, and we had to work remotely. And we had practiced that as a company a couple weeks prior to that, because the company was, you know, foreseeing that possibility. So we went home, and after about a week, I realized that this was not a short-term thing. I don't know why, but I realized that this was a watershed moment in our industry, not just our industry, but the world. And so we had, at the moment that we went home, we had to cancel a couple of weeks worth of classes. And CTI for the last 22 years has taught face-to-face classes in 260 to 300 locations every other month. And so we had to shut those down, and we only shut down two weeks at a time, thinking, oh, we'll get back. But in the back of my mind, I'm going, that's not going to happen. As luck would have it, we were already preparing to stand up a virtual studio at the research center for the reasons behind that was to scale training for large organizations, large retailers that, you know, when you have 2,000 shops, it's a number to trying to send techs to class. Mm-hmm. And so they were wanting to do something virtually. So I challenged the team to take that technology and scale it so that we could do it remotely. And that was the birth of Virtual Classroom. We sketched out the model for that inside of a week. We deployed it inside of 4 weeks. And we deployed pretty close to 500 sessions last year and reached well over 50,000 students. And that's the thing that sticks out the most for me because it's the most recent, but it's also most important to me because my team took the challenge and they pulled it off. Mm-hmm. And we did it without seeing each other face to face very often. So I thought that was an awesome moment. And I will think that, you know, as long as I'm retired, which at least a couple months.
Right place, right strategy, right time.
Yeah, a lot of luck.
So interesting. By the way, Chris and I did our first interview at Apex November 2017. It was episode 275. You'll hear about North Central Kansas, how mechanical he was, how young he was when he lost his mom. It's a great, great profile on Chris Chesney. Episode 275. We will put that link in the show notes page here so that you can all catch up on Chris. Scott Brown.
Chris, I've always thought of you as a servant leader, and you know, you've really spent your career in service to shop owners and especially the teams that work for us. You know, so I really look at your retirement as a huge loss to the independent shop owners, but it's the people that you surrounded yourself with. You know, and I'll just name a couple that I've had interactions with: John Hannigan and Denise Rawls and Todd Sanders and Al Wheeler and Lauren Boyu. They all seem to share your passion. You know, so how did this happen? Is this something that, I mean, I love culture and I love talking about culture. Do you just do an amazing job at hiring people, or, you know, what is it that ended up with these guys all becoming Chris Chesneyites.
Well,
that's made a word.
If I said that it was a skill or a process or a concept that I created, I'd be lying. I've just been blessed with meeting good people. And I've been blessed with it from the very beginning of CTI or the very beginning of DTEC in Denver. I was lucky enough to be chosen to train the trainers at the beginning of the IM240 program back in 94 in Denver. And I trained 55 instructors, and I chose about five or six of those guys out of that group. And we trained thousands of technicians in the Denver metro area. And then came along the idea of CTI, which I didn't think would work. And I thought it through a couple of times. And Brad remembers Mike DeSorbo, and Mike challenged me to, well, tweak it how you would give us the idea of how you would do it. And I tweaked it slightly. And here we are 22 years later with a program that I didn't really think, you know, maybe the last 10 years, everybody challenged me that last 3 or 4 years. But at the end of the day, it's the people that make this thing work. And, you know, I've not really... I don't really have a system. I connected myself when I started DTEC in the early 90s with people through the internet. I remember the old cars group through CompuServe. I mean, that's where I met Jim Lender and Mark Warren, and didn't see those guys until we went to SAE Congress to start the STS program that ASC or SAE started back in 1996. And so I was just blessed with meeting good people like John Riggle and those types of folks. And we weren't perfect out of the gate, but I just have a knack of hearing attitude and passion through the phone back then. I mean, today I'd be texting somebody. But if you ask any of my guys that have been with us for a period of time, like Jim Kokonis and Randy Briggs and Pete Orlando and those guys, I hired a lot of those guys over the phone. And I just have an ear for passion and, you know, ideas, innovation, things of that nature. And that's just the blessing that I have. And I won't give credit to anybody but him. But, you know, I've been very, very lucky and been able to influence leaders in the company like Todd. Todd, I've worked for, gosh, I think 3 times now. I think he's over me. thanks, Todd. You're my brother. Still love you. But just being able to influence leadership at Advance and CarQuest was truly an honor to be able to influence a large organization to move in the direction that I thought they needed to move. And for them to listen was even a higher honor. And so I leave that organization in good stead.
It sounds to me that Chris has his intuition dialed in.
Yeah, Carm, I'll just add, Chris, that's one of the things Chris has always done is, you know, he remembers being a shop owner and he knows what it's like. And he knows what he goes through. So when he walks into your building or you call him to ask him a question, he listens to you and he thinks about it and he doesn't give you some corporate line on what's best for them. And then he turns around, and he tries to figure out how he can help you. And he has always come through for us.
That's what it's about. I mean, we're not here. I didn't become a trainer to make money. That's for darn sure. You know, I probably should have stayed a shop owner now that I think back about it. But the joy that I get out of this industry is, and the love I have for this industry is, the relationships with people like the three of you on this call, and my relationship with you too, Carm. Just all the thousands of shop owners that I've met and hopefully have influenced in a positive way. When somebody comes up to me and says, what you taught me over the years has led to my success, that's payment in spades, man. That's what it's all about. And if we don't act as servants to the others in this industry, not only those that are in the industry today, like you guys, but those that came before us. You know, I was influenced by a lot of people, but there's 5 that I always give credit to. Harley Veers was a family friend, was a bear alignment leader at Indianapolis at the 500 for 29 years. And he owned a bear alignment garage in my hometown. And he took me under his wing, and I'd go to Indy every year as a kid. Vern Herman owned a shop in Hayes, Kansas. And when I was racing cars when I was a teenager, Vern always told me, when I'd go in with some highfalutin idea of what was wrong with my car, he'd tell me every time, don't forget the basics. Always consider the basics. And I've taught that in every class I've ever taught. And then the three in Denver that really influenced me the most were Don Cypher, rest his soul, Jim Tapp, and Stan Elmore. Those three, and Brad will attest to this, those three are the icons of the industry in that market. Have been for years, and they encouraged me when I opened DTEC up that I could do that, and they'd support it, and it was the right thing to do, and it gave me confidence to be able to do that, so I'll never be able to repay them for that, and that's what we need to do in this industry, all of us.
Pay it forward. Thank you so much for that, Brad. Thanks for the comment. Do you actually now have a question?
He's absolutely right. The people that he mentioned are icons in our industry, and we all do need to think about those people and then ourselves become those people moving forward. From a question standpoint, I think that we have this great relationship. We're good friends. And but what I want to ask is, you know, that so much is changing with the internet, and now we're all Zooming like this because of the pandemic. How important do you think it is to have personal relationships in our with your corporations or whoever you are, the corporate level, whoever that entity is that's feeding their parts to the independents? How important are those personal relationships?
I think they're the most important thing. I mean, our business with you grew through personal relationship. It didn't grow through once in a while a outside salesperson shows up in your building and says, do you need anything? It's those personal relationships. And because that's so hard to do in scale, we have to enable our people at the street level to be able to have those personal relationships. And I read some of the questions, and Scott had a good take on this, that we shouldn't be so worried about being our feelings hurt or not interacting and telling the truth and being totally transparent with our customers when times are tough, especially. And I see that happening because it's human nature. I mean, people that are behind the counter and answering the phones and delivering parts and servicing equipment and all the people that support this industry all want to do the best they can for their customer. But they're also challenged with doing more than they ever have in the past because, I mean, the number of people working a day are fewer than ever before. Say, hi, Brad, how's things today? How's Lisa? How's Dan? You know, how's the guys in the shop? And make it personal and try to get engaged with each of you at a partnership level rather than a supplier level. And that's a whole different ballgame. And I've preached it for 50 years and I'll continue to preach it as long as I'm alive, that it's that personal relationship between you and your supplier, you and the leadership of that supplier, that makes all the difference in the world.
I've got to stop for a moment and just echo from my little soapbox here of how much I agree with all of that. The reason that I think it's being brought up is, are we lacking in that personal relationship because a supplier says to the salesperson, you know, you used to call on 80, but you got to call on 130 accounts a week. Where's there the time to do that?
You hit the nail on the head. You said the word. It's time. I mean, technology expands everything that we can do and the people that we can reach and influence, but it doesn't change the fact that we only have 24 hours in a day. And that is never going to change unless somebody, you know, Spock comes along or Scotty comes along and beams us up somewhere and we get an extra 12 hours. But I'm sure we'll waste that extra 12 hours as well. At the end of the day, we really have to focus on making sure that we're doing the right things at the right time and managing that time well. And a lot of times that's done incorrectly by pressures from upstairs from a sales perspective. And if there was a way to incent salespeople or your suppliers to grow relationship, and we could measure that relationship in a different way than just sales, that would change the industry. I don't know what that would be, but at the end of the day, that's what is most important.
Hey, Carm here, and coming up, Chris gives us his input on the future and impact of electric vehicles. I want to let you in on a little secret. Investing in a cloud-based shop management system could be the smartest purchase you make in 2021. Manual processes can really add up and cost your shop unnecessary time and money. Now, if you're writing out repair orders, you're wasting time. If you're chasing customers for approvals, you're wasting time. If you're manually calculating invoices or logging into multiple systems, you're wasting time. And if you're wasting time, well, then you're wasting money. Do me a favor, pull up Chrome, Safari, or whatever browser you use and type in getshopware.com. Click on the Book a Demo button in the upper right corner and check out Shopware's amazingly efficient software. Trust me, you won't regret it. Again, that's getshopware.com. Did you ever consider going to a restaurant you've never heard of without first checking the reviews on Google? Well, probably not, right? Now think about someone who has to bring their car, one of their most valuable possessions, into a shop they haven't heard of. They're probably going to want to read some Google reviews first to make sure that they're going to a reputable place. Broadly is focused on helping auto shops increase their number of reviews on Google. Now they know that that's one of the best ways to build trust with potential customers and get your business discovered online. Google reviews are going to make you stand out from your competition and get more customers coming into your shop. Trust me, reviews can make all the difference in your business. So what are you waiting for? Get Broadly's system to help prospects have confidence in your shop when they see a large number of five-star reviews. Make the move. Visit Broadly on the web at getbroadly.com/chat and start chatting with a Broadly representative. Learn more on the web at getbroadly.com/chat. By the way, I've seen Chris speak at countless number of events. He's keynotes countless numbers of articles that every time I could come across one, I've always saved them to Evernote. Chris, I have a really cool collection of yours. And, of course, taught in hundreds of seminars. And we're even hearing more about his great legacy. Jay, how about you?
So I can personally attest to what Chris has been saying. Like, he personally invited me out. I just made a Facebook post on technician training and how I'm doing this lunch seminar for my technicians, and Chris saw that post and he messaged me, and he was like, and he invited me out, you know, to the headquarters, and he spent, I don't know, it was over an hour. I mean, it was a long time, and I knew he was a really, really, really busy guy, and I was just really blown away by that. So that's just some things that you don't really experience anymore from vendors. And my next question for Chris is, I always try to base my decisions on what I might regret at the end of my career. And so I was wondering, do you have any regrets? Like, do you wish you were to have done something else? I don't know whether a lot of people say, I wish I spent more time with family, but I didn't know if you had any regrets just in your long, successful career.
Obviously, you always regret not spending enough time with family. I mean, I've been blessed this week to went to my dad's service. He passed a couple weeks ago. We went to another uncle's service because he passed during my dad's service. We're in Ulysses. We got to see one of Sherry's uncles. He's 91. His family's the most important thing. And if you ever become Facebook friends with me, you see that on my Facebook post with my seven grandchildren that live here in North Carolina. I don't have any regrets in the industry. The only regret is probably the ideas that I may have had that I didn't put into action. And I can't think of what those were because I just blew past them and we came up with something else. If you sit long enough, you'll find regrets. I don't sit long enough to worry about things I regret. I regret probably not making more money so I could retire earlier, but I probably only take 2 months off again and come back and do something else anyway, because I love the industry so much. I don't want to let this stop. That keeps me juiced and keeps me alive and going. And so no regrets whatsoever, Jay. And let me add something about Jay. The reason I invited Jay Yes, I've been watching Jay for the last couple of years through his Facebook posts. He lives on Facebook, and I live vicariously through Jay on his Facebook posts. So I've got a camper in sight, and I'm going to go to take all my grandkids to Fort Wilderness. But at any rate, I was so impressed at Jay's leadership skills and his ability to change his business in a positive way that has just made his business explode. And it's those types of opportunities. I take zero credit for that. I'll take credit for recognizing it through Facebook and wanting to observe that more by inviting him to the research center so I could talk to him face to face. And it's obvious when you get in front of him why his business is rocking, because he listens. He asks great questions, and he takes exceptional care of his people.
Thank you. You're too kind.
Just from a distance, Jay, I've noticed. So congrats. Cool compliment from Chris. Wow.
Thank you. Yeah.
The other two I've known forever, so they've kind of sat on pillars for me.
Mr. Brown.
Chris, sorry to hear about your dad, and congratulations on all those grandkids. What a blessing. One of the things, I was thinking back to the first time I saw you, and you were giving a speech, and you know, I've just admired your insight every time we have a conversation or every time I see you speak. But you were talking about being a service-ready shop, and this was 12, 13, 14 years. It was a long time ago. I don't know how long ago it was. Yeah. And it was talking about being ready and having the training in the equipment so that when that car first comes across your lot, you're ready for it as a shop owner. And that is one of those things you said that it's great when you change people's lives, that I've always tried to run my shop in such a way that we'd be service ready for whatever's next. And I thank you for that. But my question to you is, do you think that the idea of being service ready, I mean, your unique position to answer this, is changing to where an individual shop can no longer be every capability for every possible problem, and that we need more relationships because we just don't have the physical size or the technicians or all the equipment, but there's a section of it that I can do better than anyone in my town. And if I have relationships with other people that do other things, you know, then together we're service ready instead of just as a shopper.
To answer your question, Scott, I think one thing that is pretty apparent to me is that specialization is going to be necessary over the coming years. You may be specializing in a certain manufacturer's vehicles, or you may be specializing in a certain system on the vehicle, something along those lines, or you may be creating departments within your own organization that specialize on different competencies or specialties. The idea of service readiness will never change. The challenge with service readiness from an education perspective is the critical need to ensure that your technicians have the competencies, the skills, to be able to solve problems. And that's not the training to solve a data network problem on a BMW. That's the competency to solve data network issues on any vehicle. And the reason that I say that is those data networks have standards, a CAN bus. I mean, a CAN bus is a CAN bus. It doesn't know it's in a BMW or an Audi or a Ford or a Chevy or anything out of Toyota. It doesn't know. It's a CAN bus. It meets certain standards of communication. And if you have a good, competent understanding of that system, you can approach it with the same approach no matter what the manufacturer. Now, can you gain efficiencies by working on Toyotas and Hondas and Subarus only and leave the Euro stuff out? Absolutely, because the scan tools navigate differently, terms are different, and you start to gain some efficiencies that way. When EVs and BEVs and HEVs and transitional hybrids, all those new technologies that are coming start to scale, you're going to have those foundational electronic competencies and high voltage electric competencies to be able to approach those in the early years safely. And so our industry has gotten away, and here I am retired, so I can say, I used to say it when I was employed, so I'll say it anyway. The industry's gotten away with trying things to fix cars for the last 50 years, and the new technology vehicles are not going to be so forgiving. You've got to do it right. You've got to follow OE process. You've got to read. You've got to prepare your diagnostic plan before you and your repair plan before you approach the vehicle. You can't just dive in without a plan. And that takes training and it takes discipline probably more than anything. So service readiness will always be here. I didn't coin the term, by the way. That's an OE term that I think I probably got from Mark Saxenberg at Toyota when he was still with Toyota. But he challenged me probably 15, 20 years ago to carry that message to the aftermarket. And so I don't take credit for that. I'm ornery enough to just open my mouth and make sure you guys are held accountable that this is what's going to be required. And now that that technology is showing up with ADAS and the electrification of the fleet, it's time. You got to do it.
You know, one of the things I love that he said in there is you just got to open your mouth and say it. And, you know, that is, I think, so critical today. We just don't open our mouth to say things just to say things and incite any riots, but some really intelligent discussions like we do here every week on the show, which I thank you all for these questions, because this is going in a place I never expected it to go. And I think there's all kinds of insights and wisdom coming out of Chris's comments. So thanks, guys. Brad, you're up next.
You know, I'm going to ask an additional question of what Chris was just saying. And with our changing technician fleet and our shortage of technicians, you know, how can you speak to, you know, basically some of our older technicians who have all the skills but don't want to really change their approach from where they were, you know, like you stated 20 years ago, to what we need to be to doing today?
Yeah, it's a real issue. And I've given a lot of thought about it. I'm not going to tell you I have an answer. I have some ideas around that. Obviously, the issue started a long time ago, and here we are. And so the solution to the issue is not going to be a switch that we reach over and flip. And the solution is there. It's just not going to happen. So there's some things that we can do short term, near term, and then have to think our way through how do we get to the end long term. Some of the short term things that you can do, and I was reading Facebook this morning in the ASOG group and in other posts, and guys were posting about things they were doing to fix that technician shortage. And gosh, I've been preaching as long as ASC's been around, and I went to one of the first ASC tests with Harley in 1972 in Great Bend, Kansas, because he said, "You want to ride to Great Bend with me? I'm going down to take a test." As long as that's been going on, we need to hold people to a standard. So when it comes to technician training, shop owners need to partner with their local vocational schools if they have them. You guys live in markets where they are available, and create a personal relationship with the instructors. Not just show up at the advisory meeting for pizza once a year. I'm talking about a weekly or at least monthly relationship with that instructor. Support him or her. Make sure they have what they need to teach class. If you don't have it, get with your supplier partner, because we have things that can help that school. But we're not going out with a deliberate way of delivering all of that. But we'll help you. But create that relationship so that you can all of a sudden get an opportunity to go stand in front of those freshmen or sophomores or juniors or seniors and say, "Hey, here's what we have available for you at our shop." And this morning I commented on one of the posts with the question was, what should I talk about if I have a chance to talk to the freshman class? And there were a lot of good answers. My answer was, tell your story. Tell the story of how Brad Pellman got into the industry as a tech, and how he now owns one of the most successful auto shops in the industry in Boulder, Colorado. Paint that roadmap. Give them a picture of this is a career and there's a great end game to this, so that they don't get in thinking, oh, I'm going to be a tech and that's all I'm ever going to be is a tech, and you're going to hire me and I'm going to spend 30 years with you. That shouldn't be. Some want that. That's okay. But for the brightest talent, you need to paint the picture of the long game. So you need to get involved. The long-term solution, I think, is what we talked a little bit about before, and that's helping them understand the technologies that are coming into play. This is going back to supporting groups like TechForce Foundation and others who are trying to influence the younger people, getting them into a specialty, creating a specialist path for the young people to get into so that they find that path. When you look at the graduates of UTI, for example, it's really alarming at how many of those automotive technicians also went back and took diesel and ended up going into the diesel profession. And why is that? Because the fleets painted a better picture for a career for them than we did. And so we have to paint that picture of what, you know, that future looks like. And it should look like the three of you on this call. You should, and Dwayne Myers probably does this better than anybody, in my opinion. He partners with local organizations and schools. He has an apprenticeship program, and he has a process where he can grow somebody from a tech position into a equity position as they acquire shops and put that person in charge of that shop. That's not the only path, but you get the idea. You've got to invest long term.
Yeah, he builds location leaders. And in fact, we have an episode coming out real soon with one of his apprentices and mentors. Chris, to your point about telling your story, recently, and I'm not sure it's resolved, but Chicago had a dealership strike from their technicians, and I heard one of the stories of an independent shop owner going down to one of the picket lines and sharing his story, and the tech saying, I didn't know you had benefits, I didn't know you had this, I didn't know you had training, I didn't know, I didn't know, I didn't know. So well said. And I think that's that story and the story about the strike in Chicago are wake-up calls.
Do you have an elevator speech? Not just for your customers, but for prospective technicians or kids getting into the industry. Do you have an elevator speech? You need to be able to say it in a couple sentences real quick that, you know, when you're out there with your new car, or when Jay's, you know, on the tail of the dragon with a Corvette, he should be parked at the gas station talking to every kid he's got about, you could have one of these. And here's how I got there.
I love it. Jay?
Yeah, you touched on this a little bit, and I have an interest in EVs, and I wanted to know your personal take. Do you think it's going to be a disruption? And if it is, how soon are we looking at? Or do we not need to worry about it at all? And I'm talking about full EVs like Tesla, some Mach-E, the Taycan. It seems like everyone's making that shift. And then half the people are saying, you know, our infrastructure is not there, so it's not going to happen, like Toyota's saying. So I just wanted to get your take, and then also CTI's take. Like, are you guys going to ever have a Tesla in your shop to dissect like you've done with other cars? So I'm very interested to know.
So I'll speak to the CTI side of things first. We do have new HEV, EV content that's been developed over the last year. We have a couple of developers in Butte, Montana, of all places. We call that CTI West. In Helena, Montana, they got a large grant from the federal government last year to build EV training curriculum, and we partnered with them on that. And so they'll be delivering the first live hands-on class in January. Not quite sure where they're going to do it, probably in Helena for this first round, but it will be scaled at the research center and other locations around the country, as well as they'll create online, virtual, and hands-on training elements of that. So there's kind of a credential process that you can go through. Not just all hands on, throwing the young kid into the you know, week-long hybrid class and send them back, that's good, but you got to have some really good foundation skills so that you can get to the good stuff in that period of time you're doing hands-on. Regarding EV and BEV, I'm, you know, Carm alluded, I give a lot of keynotes, et cetera. I've got four more trips to make this year doing keynote presentations for organizations, including ADAPT at the end of the year. And I'm being asked to speak to that exact topic. And so I'll give you some high level bullet points as they exist right now, because this thing is changing and it's changing fast. So my opinion is, yes, the electrification of the fleet is a disruptor. I think that's a no-brainer. Where it's a disruptor is the question. The three of you are going to see that disruption first because of where you live and because of how you've prepared yourself to work on those technology vehicles for the last 20 years. I mean, how old is a Prius? The first Prius. It's 20 years old. So, I mean, Brad's called me and said, where's the battery? Where's the 12-volt battery on a Tesla? I don't know. You know, so we kind of work our way through those things in their infancy. So, yes, it's going to be a disruptor, and it'll disrupt you guys first because of the markets you're in. In Ulysses, Kansas, hey, we're still picking up stuff in the street with a shovel. So I'm not sure that that's really going to be an issue here very long, but it will be a disruptor. Now, the biggest challenge I see today are the following. One is, what's an EV? There's so many people that think EV means battery electric vehicles. But if you look at the plans by the OEMs of what they're going to build over the next 15 years to 20 years, the vast majority of it is hybrid. You know, an EV could have an ICE or an internal combustion engine on board. And the hybrid technology, quite frankly, is where the biggest investment by the OEs is, not in money, but in time and focus. The optimization of a hybrid vehicle, take a Prius, to improve its fuel economy by 20% is a lot easier than trying to build an infrastructure to plug a BEV vehicle into, you know, behind the sheets or an Applebee's or wherever. Second thing is that infrastructure thing. Infrastructure is funny. You go around, you all travel a little bit, and I'm sure you've seen all the Tesla charging stations at Walmarts or Sheets or whatever. And then right next to them, there's one or two generic charging stations. So it baffles me why any OE would not build their vehicles to charge on a Tesla network or do a deal with Tesla when Tesla's already got the largest network out there. I would, if I were you, I'd keep my ear to the ground. I can't say anything more than this over the next couple of months, because you'll probably hear of a fairly significant partnership between a couple of OEs with regard to that. The third thing is that the EV conversation it seems to me that it's kind of kicked hydrogen to the curb. And hydrogen really is somewhat the long-term interim. I mean, the interim is if we can get to BEV with renewable energy, then we've, you know, that'll all work. Right now, to drive a battery electric vehicle to the point where it produces less CO2 than a hybrid, you've got to drive it almost 500,000 miles. So from cradle to grave. And we forget about that other CO2 that we produce building the batteries and the car and getting rid of it and all that stuff. So when we get renewable, that'll happen. But in the meantime, hydrogen has an infrastructure issue as well. And I would keep my ear to the ground. Over the next couple of months, you'll start hearing about a company that has created a process that allows you to carry that hydrogen in something other than a 10,000 PSI carbon fiber tank between you and your passenger or behind you or both. And instead you could buy the fuel at a supermarket and you could plug it into the vehicle and it would power a fuel cell vehicle for 400 or 500 miles. And if that becomes reality, and it's real. The technology is real and it's proven. It's just, will it get to market before somebody buys it and throws it in the trash can? If that happens, then I think hydrogen will start to move forward in the race. And then when you're watching Facebook 10 years from now, you're going to see one of those bar graphs of the last 20 years of the fuel that we use driving down the road, and you'll see hydrogen way back here, and it'll move up to the front, you know, at the end of the day. So that's my current September 10th of 2021 kind of view. Before it scales in reality, if you're working on HEVs today, you guys are in good shape. Just keep updating your training. If you're working on BEVs, continue that education. But I don't think those vehicles scale for probably another 20 years.
Great insights, Chris. Thank you for that. Chilling insights, but yet probably spot on, which is one of your favorite words, spot on. We did an episode within the last 2 weeks with a guy named Dave Giles out of Canada.
He's a good friend of mine.
Okay, great.
He was my trainer in Canada.
Yes, he was. And actually he talked about that on the episode, Chris. And it was episode 672, and he's got a business model called All EVs, All Electric Vehicles. You got to listen to it because he's talking future in his realm. And ironically, he's in Nova Scotia, and I asked him the question when I first met him. I said, you guys have EVs up there? You think of Nova Scotia as the country of Canada, right? But it was a great, very enlightening, smart guy, and I love that episode. And then we had Derek Kaufman on, Cutting Through the Fog of Electric Vehicles. It was episode 661. And Jay, to your point, as much as Derek tried to bring some of this future tech to the ground, there were so many things way up in the air, and how many battery makers are in the world today, and all of the issues that we would consider on the race for EV. You have to listen, you have to learn, you have to read, and you have to figure it out yourself. But to Chris's point, you got to be repairing hybrids today. And if not, you're never, this is my opinion, you're never going to make it into whatever, if it's hydrogen or electric down the line. And so many guys, ladies have taken their shops and also dual branded it, you know, Grand Rapids hybrid along with, you know, their own Irvine's auto repair. I think it's one hell of a strategy. A very, very powerful discussion. Thank you all for being here, Chris. Great insights as always. Scott?
Chris, you know, you mentioned CTI, and I got to say, you signed me up as, I think, one of the very first shops as a member of the CTI network and CTI training. You know, you say that somebody else coined the word service readiness. I heard it first from you. So it's in my mind, that's where it came from. But I also think, you know, you were seen around the corner, and you're the first person that I ever remember talking about a looming technician shortage. I mean, just incredible around the corner foresight. And that's still, I think that's the biggest challenge facing the industry today. And you spent your career helping us, you know, to solve that. Do you see an end game here? Is it we need to increase our labor rates so that we can increase the pay? Is it that we need to start earlier, you know, with them in ninth grade training? And you know, I just want the benefit of all of your years of experience in the next 3 minutes.
The answer is yes. The issue is so multifaceted. I mean, there's so many variables in this, Scott. The challenge that we have from the perception of most is that the technician shortage is a headcount shortage. And I mean, the headcount shortage in itself today in industry or any industry or market is real. I mean, I went for coffee here in Ulysses, and the coffee shop is closed for 2 days because they have a shortage of people to work at the coffee shop. That's all real. I think where your focus needs to be, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, creating that career path and getting involved and creating relationships to attract people into the industry. The other thing, the other big elephant in the room is you've got to invest in the people you already have and ensure that they are growing with skills and competencies that meet your business model, so that they are ready to service the vehicles that show up in your door that you choose to serve. You know, you can choose to serve GMs, or you can choose to serve Toyotas only, or you can choose to serve all of them. And so based on your business model, you've got to have that career path. So career paths are hypercritical. And it doesn't matter where you're at in your career today as a technician. If you want to stay competent and you want to stay valuable, relevant more than anything in this industry, you can't swap parts on these vehicles. Can you? Yeah, you can. I mean, but when you get to the point where you are condemning modules and or controllers on a vehicle, it's not a swap process 9 out of 10 times. Most of them you have to initialize or introduce to the network in some way, shape, or form. And once you do that, can you send it back to the shop? And then you have to remodel your business model. And I've been saying this forever. And so I did a keynote speech at Vision a few years ago on Sunday morning, and there's probably 700 or 800 people in the room. And I asked the question for how many technicians in the room, and a lot of people raised their hand, and the rest of them were shop owners. And I asked the technicians this question: how many of you have had this thought? Is this all there is? Is this all I'm ever going to do or be? Raise your hand. And the majority raised their hand. And the shop owners, I asked them to look and see if it's your tech and go have a conversation with them, because that's that erosion of our fleet of techs, if you will, in this industry. And we can't afford to lose any of them. We're losing them at a rapid rate to other industries. Why? I just drove through Kansas for the last week. I probably saw 5,000 windmills and saw propeller blades blaze past me coming the other way on the two-lane highways. And an entry-level position to change oil in a turbine at the top of one of those windmills is $40 an hour with full benefits and retirement. So as a young person working in this part of the world, and I'm approached by a shop to go make $10, $15 an hour to start, or make $40 an hour to start, don't tell me how cool cars are. I need to feed my family. I want to go buy that truck. You know, I want to go hunting. I want to have a life. And so we as an industry need to step it up. So yes, we need to build a business model where we charge enough so that we have the margins available to pay the people so that we can continue to invest in them and that they will commit their careers to us for a period of time.
A great, great, great answer. Thank you. Brad, you have the last one.
Yay. All right. I'm not sure if it's a question or just a statement, but Chris, I want you to hear this because I think it's important. You've been a key piece, a key player in the development and success of independence across the nation. You helped create CTI. You were part of CarQuest and that group of people who cared about independence and helped them grow. And you brought instruction to us before we knew we needed it. And I'll use a quick story that happened recently. I was in a meeting. It was talking about safety around electrics and hybrids. And I was just kind of sitting there dumbfounded because I was in there with a lot of people from manufacturers. And they were trying to discuss how we need to develop training for this. And I just thought and finally spoke up and said, you know, independents have had this for 15, 20 years because of Chris Chesney, because of TechNet. And it's surprising that we're talking about it. But if you need a resource, you should go talk to these people because it's already there. So that's what you have done, whether we liked it or not. You brought technology to us knowing we were going to need it ahead of time. You instructed us and you taught us and you made us better. And that was better for the consumer and it was better for us. And you were there for us and have always been. And I hope that, here's my question, that you will continue to be.
Thanks, Brad. And it wasn't me. And you're right, this industry is, as I championed it. I'm passionate about it, but this industry is full of great training. has been, always has been, and it's always the hard part is getting them to come to the trough and eat. And I think new technologies will kind of force that to a certain point. My future is exciting. I haven't even started looking. I'm not going to leave the industry. I was given a voluntary early retirement option from Advance, and it shocked me, and I made a math problem out of it, and Sherry told me I'd regret it if I didn't take it. So I prayed about it, and I did it, and I have zero regrets. I owe so much to the CarQuest organization and Advance organization for giving me the freedom to do the things that I thought were the right thing to do. And so kudos to them for allowing that to happen. But I'm not done. I've got a lot left in the tank. I'm going to take a couple months off. I've got some projects sitting outside my shop that needs to be finished so that I can work in air-conditioned comfort in the heat of North Carolina on those projects. And I'll be back. I've got people ringing the phone and throwing things at me, and I'm going to sit down over the next couple of months and consider them and try to make a decision around Apex and see what I want to be when I grow up. So we'll just put it that I intend to be active in the industry for the next 4 or 5 years at least.
This was great. I've taken so many incredible notes as I was inspired by this great dialogue. One of them was visionary. But, Chris, one of my favoriteest phrases is to know what's around the next corner. And no doubt this entire group shared their feelings about that and about you, because you do have that incredible intuition of hiring some of the best trainers we have in our industry. So thank you for that, always knowing what's around the next corner. Again, as I said earlier in the beginning of the show, I decided to do this Q&A. Chris was on my short list, and then he said yes, and then all of a sudden, oh, by the way, and it's something I can't tell you, but in 2 weeks I will. Can I still be on the show? And this is wild. So kind of a tribute, but yet I hope you always will accept an invitation to come on the show. Chris Chesney, retired for now, but formerly Senior Director, Customer Training, Advanced Pro, and CarQuest Technical Institute. Jay Hu from CarMedics, Durham, North Carolina, and Scott Brown, Cardinal Shell, Springfield, Virginia, and Brad Pellman from Pellman's Automotive, Boulder, Colorado. Thank you all so much. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.